We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 270. On today's episode, we've got the Yankees clinched a wild card spot. Didi may be out for the season, and Scott has no voice. I summed everything up right there. It's yeah, like the voicemail on Seinfeld when George's father calls Steinbrenner. Call me back. George may be dead.
We just got the news right before we came on about Didi and the fact that he may be lost for the rest of the 2018 season.
Unreal.
It's crazy. You know, talking about how nonchalant too Boone apparently was, you know, said it and actually just dropped it in there after reading what Hoke tweeted. But yeah, my voice is completely gone. I've had one ridiculous weekend myself. The Yankees obviously couldn't finish up on Sunday, but my garage and hot water heater caught on fire on Friday.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, on Saturday, I witnessed one of the greatest college football upsets of all time history when my alma mater, Old Dominion, beat Virginia Tech. Go Monarchs. And then yes, I had a few beverages yesterday, and I yelled like a lunatic. And then today I have been hating my life, and I have no voice.
Yeah.
So that sums up my weekend.
The Saturday was worth it. The garage fire is a little scary. You sent me that picture. Have you figured out what the hell has happened?
Yeah, I mean, the water heater literally caught on fire. The panel in the water heater caught on fire. It got too hot. It shorted out. The wires shorted out. And then there were flames coming up. Luckily, we caught it like almost immediately. Because I think if that thing had gone another minute or two, my house would be burned down right now. So thank God.
It imploded like the Yankees bullpen on Sunday.
It was like an AJ Cole water heater. It was horrible.
Oh, man. What a weekend. Let's dive right into it. Actually, before we dive into the Didi news, because that's really like the thing that shook everybody on Sunday afternoon. I want to remind you guys about the voicemail segment we are going to do on next Monday's show. It's going to be a season wrap-up voicemail segment. We want you guys to call up and leave your favorite or least favorite or both moment from the season. We want to get as many people to do this as possible because that will... We'll hear stuff back from April and May. We'll hear stuff from the summer. We'll hear stuff recently where people are just pissed off. It's going to be a fun segment. Call it up. Leave a 30-second voicemail. Make it good. The number is 646-480-0342. Again, that'll be next Monday.
So quickly, real quick. Sorry, I almost forgot about something, but I promised something that I would do, and I almost forgot. But so at the game yesterday, at the football game, I was at one of the guys that's in our Facebook group. His name is Alex. He's been on the live streams before. Got me and some of my boys into this area where you could buy a beer during the game, which is, you know, it's one of the best places you could be at a college football game. So so shout out to Alex. Good looking out. We got like he got four or five of my guys in there, so it was pretty cool.
Nice. Yeah, it's always fun when you randomly just see a podcast listener out and get to do something cool like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Boone in his post-game press conference just figured, here, let me sneak this devastating news to all Yankees fans out there that Didi may not return this season because on that slide home on Saturday on the game-winning play, he tore cartilage in his right wrist and he had an MRI and a cortisone injection. And when you saw the play, everyone is just focusing on the left hand because that's the hand that's touching home plate, and nothing looked out of the ordinary. Didi immediately started celebrating. He was celebrating with the champagne and everything. So you're just thinking today was a regular day off for Didi because, like Judge, like Hicks, like he's just going to sit, guys. It's the hangover game. You kind of understand that. But then, apparently, he woke up this morning and felt discomfort. He said he's optimistic that he's going to return. But holy shit. If Didi cannot come back this year, that's just like another gut punch that this team really cannot handle right now.
No, it's a terrible thing. Obviously, it shakes up the entire lineup. It shakes up what you do on defense. It changes everything. And I mean, he's not going to, if, and just so everybody knows, we literally started recording just as that news came out. So thing information may change. There may be more information that comes out after we stop recording. I'm kind of following Twitter and all the other areas that we could get some news from it as well during the show. But yeah, it changes everything, because not only, you know, are you potentially losing him for this wild card game and you know, future playoffs if that does happen, if everything goes the right way. But you're now not having him for the final week and a half. Most likely they're gonna, you know, hold him back. It's not like he's gonna come back and play. He's gonna be gone for the regular season. And
he's feeling better, maybe a tune-up game in Boston next weekend. But those games at that point, I mean, they might still matter, but hopefully they don't matter. You're going to try and win these next four games so you can lock up home field advantage, and you don't have to go balls out in the final weekend of the season. And you can actually rest some guys and get ready for that playoff game. Like, it boggles my mind that we're at a point where Boone has said, he said it on the radio, he said it in his pregame press conferences, we're going pedal to the metal to try and win home field advantage. But then he doesn't actually do that. He goes to AJ Cole in the sixth inning today when you have a lead. He rests Judge today, and I understand now why he rested Didi, but he rests Aaron Hicks, who we thought maybe his ankle was sore, but he ended up pinch hitting and playing late in that game, so
although
he probably could have started.
He looked like he was hobbling towards the end of when he was running down the line. He was not running hard. And
It
looked like
he
was pulling up.
Play Aaron Judge, though. You really tell me Aaron Judge can't DH today?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I understand. Look, I think they're still trying to be careful with Judge at the same time. So like to him, he would be the one guy.
Are
I would
you
say.
Trying to be careful, or are you trying to win home field? If you're telling me
I
we're
think
just trying to
they
be
have
careful,
to be careful
fine.
With Judge.
But don't talk out of both sides of your mouth. He is contradicting himself. What he is saying and what he is doing is contradictory.
I don't have so much of a problem. I'm trying to like wrap my head around all of
we're
these.
We're going a mile
things.
A minute here because.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with him sitting Judge. When you're looking at the other ones, there was because of injury. Like Judge has to get some rest in between here. You can't just continuously play him since he's come back because of the wrist.
Fine, then.
Because
then,
there's a breaker or whatever. If maybe it's a deep bone bruise at this point, whatever it is, you can't go out and play him every day. You need him to be ready and healthy and fresh for that stretch run for you know when you need him. So like I can't get too mad about that, honestly.
So you're fine with the lineup today.
No, but the other ones were obviously injuries. Like, I don't think Hicks... No, I'm surprised Hicks was pinch hitting if he was injured. That would be the one thing. So when I saw him pinch hitting, I was like, oh, okay, why was he not playing? And then I saw him hobbling a little bit towards the end. I'm like, well, why is he pinch hitting then? So that was where I was questioning that. The Didi thing, obviously, we know now. But yeah, I mean, even if Didi were to come back in a tune-up game, then you're looking at a one-game tune-up for a guy that's been out for a week plus, right. And then he's supposed to just get back, find his timing, make sure he's all good with a jacked-up right wrist. Like that is not an easy thing to do.
It totally sucks. And without Didi in this lineup, they are so right-handed heavy because now you got Luke Voit in there because Greg Bird can't even crack the lineup on hangover day. Yeah. So Luke Voit's another right-handed hitter. Neil Walker, I understand he's a switch hitter, and his left side's probably better. Aaron Hicks is a switch hitter. His left side is probably better as well. But Brett Gardner can't find the field either because McCutcheon's playing well. So without Didi, you have no left-handed hitters, really. And really not much left-handed power at all.
No, I mean, I'm circling Hicks right now and looking to see how he is tomorrow and the next day because... You know, if he isn't healthy, if this is something that's a potential, you know, issue down the road as well, I mean, he would be one of those guys that you could probably slot in a similar role where Didi was, just because he's been so good this year. But you're right, it's a huge, huge, huge hole not having Didi's left-handed bat in the three spot.
And Hicks has been great. I know Michael Kay brought the stat up today that Hicks is a 4.6 WAR according to Baseball Reference, which is third on the team behind Judge and Severino. So he's been a really valuable asset to this team, and that's great and all. He's led off, he's batted third, he's hit wherever in the lineup, and it's great. He plays a good defense. But the importance of Didi, especially what we saw him do in the postseason last year, Didi was the catalyst, really, for most things in the postseason last year. He got the big home run in the wildcard game, homers off Kluber, a number of different things. Even if he does come back, if he's out of rhythm, then it's essentially you're playing without Didi Gregorius.
Yeah. No, yeah, it's a It's a big problem. It's his throwing hand too. I mean, you know, like that's something to think about when you're talking about a shortstop going out there and making plays. You know, is the feel for the ball going to be completely there if you have a torn ligaments in your throwing hand? Like, these are absolutely significant problems. I know the quarter zone shot in there. Didi is saying that he's optimistic. But what does that really mean? That's a guy just, you know, trying to be competitive and trying to, you know, obviously be as optimistic as possible because he wants to return. There's no doubt about it. But I cannot get to a point where anywhere this is not just devastating news for the Yankees, honestly. It's terrible news.
So then what happens? Does Glaber go back to shortstop and Walker plays second, or does Hechavarria play? Because we saw the defense in the left side of the field when it was Glaber and Andujar. It was not pretty.
No, that's actually true. They may put Hechavarria at short just to shore up that defense and throw him at the bottom of the lineup, and just kind of assuming that the rest of the lineup will be good enough and they shore up that defense. So I could see that, but I think it depends on the matchup, really. I think it depends on
the starting pitcher. Yeah. So if a right-handed pitcher is in, I think you'll see Walker at second and Glaber at short. So you can get an extra left-handed bat in there with Walker. But if it's a right-handed pitcher, I could still see them – or excuse me, a left-handed pitcher, I could see them going Hechavarria.
Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt when you have Hechavarria in there, the defense is, you know, as close as you could be with having Didi in there, because they're both plus defenders. So you're not losing much, if any, at shortstop with Hechavarria, defensively. So obviously with the bat, you're losing quite a bit, but defensively, it's pretty close.
So the Yankees did clinch a playoff spot. Hopefully they do clinch that home field. A lot of people are going to be trying to go to that wild card game. And one place you can get those tickets is on SeatGeek. Getting tickets online can be far too complicated. With hundreds of sites and varying levels of reliability, it's hard to know who to trust. That's why SeatGeek is the way to go. SeatGeek pulls millions of tickets into one place so you can easily find the seats you want for a price you're willing to pay. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. And I know, Scott, you've used SeatGeek 100 times. I've used it 100 times. I've gone to the theater. You have bought Jets tickets. Maybe we're going to be looking for some wild card tickets with SeatGeek. Hopefully some ALDS, ALCS. If we're really lucky, some World Series tickets.
Yeah, no, it absolutely makes it a lot easier because you could search and find the best deals. And again, they're not going out there and just and giving you bad deals. They're not giving you ones that you don't feel confident about. You're going through SeatGeek. It's super easy to navigate the site, and you could. I've already been looking, what the playoff tickets for a wild card game are ranging. I saw some of the ones in 205 are actually going for. If you want to get lower in the level, they're going for anywhere between 175 and like 225 an hour, and I'm sure they'll just continue to go up. So definitely, I would hit that up as you're doing it. I do have the SeatGeek app on my phone. It makes it a lot easier to look, and it's probably the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. Again, I told you guys before, I've used it for Jets tickets. I've been looking it for playoff tickets for the Yankees as well. So best of all, if you have not used it and you're a listener to the show, you can use the SeatGeek app and get your first purchase, $20 off your first purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app, enter promo code Bronx today. That's promo code Bronx for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
Did you have a problem with the Yankees popping champagne after they clinched a spot?
We talked about this last year. So
I know. Same exact thing last year.
Yeah. So look, here's my deal with it. Like, I think people should celebrate. I think you should have fun. You should celebrate accomplishments. To me, the whole popping champagne thing is over the top. I don't really care enough. Like, I've stopped caring about it. Like, so I don't have a strong opinion anyway. It's whatever to me, but I think it's over the top. Like, I wouldn't want to pop champagne for clinching. I don't even know where I'm going to play I don't know.
That's actually the difference, because last year when they clinched, they knew they were going to be home for that game. And it was kind of at the point where they really didn't have much more to play for after they clinched. This year, they still have work to do.
When you go balls out on your celebration on that one, like, don't the rest of them just get this, nope, you know, monotonous and boring?
Last year, they celebrated after they beat the Twins. They celebrated after they beat the Indians. So it's every step now.
I know. I'm not gonna go all get off my lawn on this whole thing. But at the same time, I'm like, you know, act like you've been there before a little bit.
Some of the guys, I mean, it was their first time. Boone's first time. He's telling them all to beat some ass. Stanton's first time. It burns so good. He's got the champagne in his eyes. So some of these players, Glaber and Duhar, they've never done that before.
No, I mean, yeah. Again, like, I have no problem with celebrations. I think you should celebrate your accomplishments. You should do that because you don't know when, you know, this type of thing is going to happen unless you're the New York Yankees, and they should be expecting it every year, honestly, especially the way this lineup is and the way that this team has constructed itself. So, you know, a little bit of been there before wouldn't hurt. But again, I don't care enough. Like, they're most of them are in their young 20s or early 20s, and they're going to pop champagne and have fun. So whatever.
I saw.
How about you not be hungover for the next goddamn game? How about that? How about that?
Don't lose to the 115 loss Orioles when you go out there the next day. But I saw Gary Sanchez dumping champagne all over people. It's fine. He's going to be the starting catcher. We'll talk about that in a second. But they're tripling down on Gary Sanchez. But you know who I did not see celebrating? That's Greg Bird. No pictures surfaced with Bird in them.
That's hilarious. Yeah, and if we remember last year, there was some googly eyes between Bird and Meredith in the, mm-hmm. in the celebrations. So maybe not so much. Maybe that's part of the problem. Maybe she was throwing googly eyes
at Luke Voit this year.
Yeah, maybe Meredith stiff-armed Bird, and it's been the root of all evil here. It's been the problem. Greg Bird, he can't handle it emotionally. Maybe that's part of it. Nobody's talked about that. There's an angle for somebody to run with. No, I don't know where he is, but Luke Voit pretty much took him out of this out of play.
We talked about this before we started recording, but I thought it was awkwardly funny when Boone was telling them to beat some ass. Mm-hmm. You said that is a common thing to say when you're trying to fire guys up. I understand. Kicks. Let's go out there and kick some ass.
No, I've definitely said beat some ass. Let's go beat some ass right now. Yeah, absolutely. Like, cause you want to beat the teams, you want to beat them up, you want to bury them, you want to beat some ass.
Yeah, no, never heard beat some ass. It kind of reminded me of when in 40-Year-Old Virgin, Steve Carell's character was talking about boobs, and you could just tell he's never felt boobs before because he said they felt like a bag of sand. And we could tell Boone has never actually given a pump-up speech before. That's why he said beat some ass.
Yeah, see, I disagree. I think beat some ass might be maybe it's a generational thing. I don't know. Maybe the kids aren't saying it today.
Boone's more in your age group. Than he's mine.
He's closer to mine for sure. So beat some ass back in the 90s was a thing. And maybe it's not now.
Can you imagine like Joe Torre or Derek Jeter in one of those celebrations back in 2003 saying, let's go out there and beat some ass?
Oh, Jeter definitely said beat some ass.
Now, Jeter beat some ass, but he doesn't say it to his fellow teammates.
He does that privately. He also would pump people up by saying, let's go beat some ass. He would just say it in a more serious way. Let's go beat some ass. You've never heard that?
He tears that ass up.
It's super common in my world.
You gonna buy one of those Defend the Bronx shirts?
No, I'll just make one for myself. It'll probably look
better. How can you defend the Bronx if the game's not in the Bronx?
That's what I was wondering. It's an interesting tagline when you don't know where you're gonna be playing. It's specifically talking about your home field.
Right. And everyone was freaking out over this Judge captain moment when he pulled Luke Voit aside and told him that they would not be where they are if it was not for him.
Man, see, even the boys that were in the minor leagues with Greg Bird, with JV Bird, are turning on him. It's too easy. This is just the guy comes in looking like Jason Giambi, hitting like Jason Giambi, having, you know, as much fun as Nick Swisher, and they love him for it. And Greg Bird is now an afterthought. I'm not even sure we're gonna remember his name after next year.
It's crazy. I haven't seen him at all. He's not in the dugout. Like when they were on that last road trip, remember?
He's there. He's not doing much.
He's just not on camera. He's hiding. Yeah. He's ashamed of himself.
Yeah. You know, I refer back to my analysis with when Derek Jeter was in the tunnel. I talked about
this with Brian on last episode. Like, you were the first that came out of nowhere. I thought you were just grasping at straws. But
no,
you may have nailed something there.
I'm telling you, man. I have an innate ability to read people and see how they. I did it yesterday with somebody at a game too, and they're like, "Holy crap." There's a body language on this guy. There's a something that he's saying with his face, and I can read it, and it's not good.
So we've got a little bit of good news as we're recording this. The Minnesota Twins are now up 5-1 over Oakland in the fifth inning. So they are doing the Yankees dirty work.
Thankfully. I mean, but Oakland scores like 97 runs,
right,
you know, a weekend. So who knows?
They might walk it off. And yeah. You see that Chris Davis walk-off celebration where he did the jump shot with the helmet?
Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen him do that before.
They're feeling themselves. Like that. See, right now, if you're just comparing Yankees and A's, the Yankees are trending down and the A's are trending up. So a lot of the postseason is how are you playing at that moment? Who's the hot team? The hot team's going to win just because you've had a better regular season. Like last year, the Indians had the best regular season out of anybody, but the Yankees were hotter at the right time and they beat them. So if you're going to be playing a one game and the Oakland A's have steamrolled the second half, have one of the best records in baseball since June, like, you don't want to play the hot team in October.
No. It's going to be a very difficult game. The pitching is going to be nail-biting because these guys can all hit. You know, you go top to bottom, they have a bunch of young dudes who can hit. Oh, and then they have some veteran guys, you know, who are having career years. So they're not an easy lineup. The pitching is going to be, it could be a slugfest, but the Yankees have to bring their bats. You know, they're going to start whoever they start, maybe Mike Fiers, and then they'll go bullpenning after that. But it's going to be a slugfest. You're going to have to hit the ball.
Are you a little bit worried that you've mocked Billy Bean 1,000 times on this podcast and he might come back to beat your ass in the wild card game?
No, because it's, you know, that's a one game. It's a play-in game, in my opinion. So he's still got to do something.
Right.
I mean, yeah. You know, there's nothing of record yet.
Billy Bean's teams in the playoffs have never performed.
No, it's true. They've never performed. And, you know, there's also that. Hopefully, if they're playing this hot, you know, there's going to be a cool down period at some point. So maybe it'll be towards the very end in a wild card. You never know. But at the bottom line is the Yankees don't want to play that game anywhere else but Yankee Stadium because they do have, you know, a different level of confidence, a different type of, I mean, you didn't see it today against the Orioles, but I feel like in games like that, if you're going to play one game, you want it to be at Yankee Stadium with the way that the ball can fly out and the way that the Yankees are built for that place. So, to me, that's ever important. At the same time, in the same token, I think I said this before, but I don't think the A's give a rat's ass where they play. Like, that's the type of team they are right now. They don't care. They're just going to go, and they're going to play hard, and they're going to do their thing.
And Oakland's going to be they're flying east regardless because they're going to have to play in Boston after that. So they just take the flight a couple days earlier and then take the bus up to Boston.
As convenient. Yep.
Yep. And the other question other than where the game is going to be played is who's going to start that game. And Hap started today, which does line him up for October 3rd. So he'd start again on Friday against Boston, and then that would line him up 5 days later to start against Oakland on October 3rd. I think that we will know by Tuesday who is going to start that game because Monday is Severino's turn, and then Tuesday is Tanaka's turn. If the Yankees push either of those pitchers, that means they've got something up their sleeve to push them and line them up for the wild card game. If they let them start, I think that means Hap is going to be getting the ball on October 3rd.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because they do have, you know, I could see Sonny Gray coming out and making a start and pushing somebody back.
Yep.
So I have a feeling that's what's going to happen. And honestly, like, I feel like they should do that anyway.
Well, at the same time, though, do you want Sonny Gray getting a spot start when you're trying to have the game be at Yankee Stadium?
Like, yeah, I mean, yeah,
there's a balancing act here with what they have to do.
There's no doubt. It's hard for them to prepare for anything except for the fact that they know that they're going to play in this game and who do you want? And is that worth more than where the game is going to be? And to me, the way that these guys are going, Severino, Happ, and Tanaka, like Severino's coming off of one of his better starts. Tanaka's coming off one of his not so great starts. Happ looked, I mean, he had 7 strikeouts today, but he only got through 5.
He labored through innings 2 through 5.
He was throwing a lot of pitches. So who's better?
Also the worst team in baseball, though. Like, he wasn't facing the Red Sox lineup. He wasn't facing a good lineup today. Baltimore sucks. They're historically bad. And he threw 105 pitches in 5 innings.
So, but my point to that is that, you know, there's no clear guy that's like the hottest right now, honestly.
So then you might just want to let everyone go on their turn,
possibly
lock up home field, and let the chips fall where they may.
But I doubt that. You know,
I doubt it too.
I'm sure you have to already know.
Do you think they know right now who's starting that game?
I think they have a good idea.
Barring injury.
I think they have a good idea. And I still think it's going to be Tanaka.
See, I've changed my tune, and I think it's going to be Severino.
Okay.
because the way they talked about how good Severino looked against the Red Sox, I think that's all they were looking for, was one good start out of Severino, and they could use that to springboard him, because it should be Severino. Right.
Well, you know, if you look at what Tanaka's done on the road too, Tanaka's been exceptional this year on the road. If this game is in Oakland,
not on the road,
huh?
Hopefully, the game's not on the road.
But I know, but it could be. I'm saying if the game is on the road, that's going to go into some decision making. It could absolutely. So the fact if they were to bump someone back, at least they'd have a little bit of some options in what they could do. You know, maybe somebody would get an extra day or two, and like if that's going to be. A fallback option, like Tanaka could do that. You could absolutely, you know, he's proven that he could throw on extra day rest and be okay. Well, Severino, I don't think you ever want to do that with.
If you push Severino from Monday, which is his regular day, to Friday, then that lines him up for 5 days. If you push him to Thursday, that's 6 days. And I think what they do is they would push whoever they're going to start, they're mm-hmm. going to push to Thursday, or they're going to let Hap just start on Friday. I think that's what I think that's my guess at what the plan is. And then I think they look at it as a good thing. Give a guy an extra day's rest before that wild card game.
Yeah, I don't think it's a terrible thing. With Severino, it worries me a little bit, but especially Tanaka, for sure. I think there's absolutely no question that doesn't make a difference for Tanaka.
And I know they keep saying we're not looking ahead to Boston, but I think Severino starting also gives them the best chance to beat Boston. Again, because that gives Hap game one and game five. That gives Tanaka game two, which is on the road. And then that gives Severino game three, which is at home, which is where he's better.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to do it, they're going to have to look forward. Irresponsible not to look forward beyond that game, at least to some extent. You have to see what's going to happen. You know, how much that plays into your decision making. You know, that to me is where the question marks are, and like how much you're supposed to actually let that in there, because you obviously have to win the one game first, but you also don't want to be ill prepared that if you do win that game, you know, you have things set up the way you want them as much as you possibly can control for the next series. So there does need to be a level of looking forward. It just can't be too much. You just can't. And that's why I think that having these three guys, be so close to kind of what you're going to get at this point, there's not really a terrible decision, honestly.
No,
like, I don't think one could go. You could say this, and like you get killed for that because they're all pretty close.
I think that would be unfair if whoever they choose, we then kill them if that guy doesn't pitch well. I mean, I understand that it's their job to pick the right pitcher, but I honestly do think it's kind of a coin flip between these three guys.
No doubt. No, that's what I'm saying. So that's why I think whoever they choose, it's like, it's really not, at that point, it's just on that pitcher to execute. Because all three of them have the ability and right now are pitching well enough to execute in that wild card game.
But you would go with Tanaka?
Yeah, I would go with Tanaka. I think he's been the best pitcher for the last month, the most consistent for the last month. He's a gamer. We've seen it. He's just, to me, that would be the guy.
Well, you're using his October last year as the evidence.
I'm using October last year. I'm using, yeah absolutely. And well, I'm using what he's done in the past month. It's not 1 week. It's not one start.
Cumulative, pretty much, since he returned from the DL. Yeah. We're going to talk about him and his numbers in a few minutes, but since he's returned from the DL, overall, he's been very, very good.
Yes. Yeah, so I think there's a lot of trust in him.
Rank them, though. Who's your second option?
It would be Severino, I think. I think Hap's the third option for me.
Does it have anything to do with the fact that Hap is new to the team, or is it just because...
No, I don't really care about that at all.
He's not as good of a pitcher.
I don't care about that at all. I think that Hap in his... Hap can get a little erratic with the walks, and that scares me against a team like Oakland, who could put up a lot of runs quickly and can hit the ball all over the place. So I think Hap could be very hittable against Oakland. Personally, I think, like,
well, he pitched really well against them when the Yankees were. That's the only game they won.
I understand that, but now they're also seeing him again, and you know, that to me is also a reason why he gets downgraded.
And another reason why it might be Tanaka is because the Oakland did not see Tanaka in that series, and they saw Severino and hit Severino. Yes. I know there was a lot of issues with Gary Sanchez and Severino in that game, so it wasn't only that Severino was getting crushed by Oakland, but they did hit a lot of balls hard off of him.
Yeah, but it was also a small sample size too, so I'm kind of throwing that game away. They didn't see good Severino, that's for
sure.
They
did not see good Severino.
No. So, yep. So that's why I think I would do that. And then Hap, I don't know, his walks worry me a little bit, you know, with a team like that. And you know, and they can hit the ball out of the ballpark and they can score a ton of runs. And you know, if there's runners on base, obviously those home runs become more of a problem. So, I guess that's where I'm leaning.
I almost feel stupid saying this, but I kind of have to say it. Shame on the Yankees for letting it even get to this position. They should not be in the position right now where they have to go the last seven games of the year, four in Tampa, four at the Red Sox, and have to fight for home field in the wild card. I did not think there was any chance of that happening if you had asked me back on, say, August 15th or wherever, pick a date a month and a half ago. I did not think they were going to be in this position.
No, well, there's two factors. One, they've played like dog shit. and you know, part of the reason is because there have been numerous injuries. That's not an excuse, but it is part of what has happened. And then the guys who, you know, a lot of the, you know, the Gary Sanchez of the world, yes, he's been hurt, but he's also played horribly when he's been back. So offensively, at least, you know, there's been some defensive issues. I think he's over the past, you know, 4 or 5 days, he's played better defensively. We've seen some, I think, just better play from him, but... And then who could have predicted the torrid, you know, run that Oakland has made as well. So that also goes into it, but even if they made that run and the Yankees, you know, acted, even a little sniffed what they were in the first half, like it should have been out of reach.
Yeah. And, speaking of another thing that has not gone well, and that's the bullpen. So the bullpen as a whole has, when you just think of their overall performance, you think, oh, they've been terrible this month. And really, when you look at it, the guys who we're going to rely on in the playoffs have still been good or very good. It's the AJ Coles, Luis Sessa, Canely, Loaisiga, all these mop-up guys who have had to pitch a lot recently because their starters don't go deep, because Boone has used them in weird situations, like he used Cole today in a 2-run game in a high leverage situation. They've all been terrible. AJ Cole gets the ball today after Hap in a game the Yankees need to win. His last 13 appearances coming in today, 15 innings, 23 hits, 13 earned runs, and a 1,062 OPS allowed. He's allowing opposing hitters to be Mike Trout, and he's getting the ball in a 2-run game when the Yankees are, quote, going pedal to the metal. What the hell is going on?
And this is after we saw him, his last, what was it, Friday, when he pitched against the Orioles and was terrible as well. So he's been so bad lately. I don't know why he's even on this roster right now. Like, legitimately, why is he there? The roster's expanded. You could have a number of other people that are, even if they're bad, they're not as bad as what he's been.
Try
give me
something
Justin
different.
Sheffield in that situation.
Try anything different. I would not be killing Boone right now if he just tried something different. And if it didn't work, well, then it didn't work. I get what he's trying to do because Green, D-Rob, Britton, Betances have all pitched a lot. They've had to pitch a lot. So he's trying to avoid overusing them as they go to the playoffs. Fine. That's his philosophy. That's the organizational philosophy. It's not going to change no matter how much we yell about it. But when Cole does not work and we know he's not going to work, try something different.
Yeah, there's absolutely no reason why AJ Cole should throw any type of innings at all for the New York Yankees at this point in the season. There's really no excuse for it. Like, honestly, he should be DFA'd because he's a waste of a spot. There's no reason for him to be on this team.
He was a fun little thing for 2 weeks.
When we first got him, and before even Adam Warren left, it was right when Adam Warren left, honestly, is when he turned bad.
When he actually had to be relied upon.
He looked good. He looked pretty good, actually, before Warren was gone. Then they said, okay, international pool money, give me some international pool money. We've turned it into good players. It'll potentially be going towards other good players. They used it. They signed some guys, shipped Adam Warren to Seattle. AJ Cole, you're now in the Adam Warren spot, and he's been freaking horrible ever since. Ever since, he's been bad. And, you know, when you're coming down in the last 2 weeks of the season and you're in a 2-run game against the Baltimore freaking Orioles, who already basically fired their manager, have half of the Norfolk Tides playing on their team, and you have freaking just every other player who was worth a goddamn on that team has been shipped out somewhere. Is just lighting up AJ Cole. There's no reason for him to be on this team. Zero reason. Why would you put him in at all?
Just the meatballness of the two pitches he served up for home runs today. Like they played it in slow motion. You just spinning slider, spinners, just going right to the middle of the zone, barrel of the bat. Like you blinked an eye, and the Orioles had three runs.
Yeah, it was horrible. And after that, also, you know what? And if you are going to bring him in, you better goddamn well have someone up behind him and have a very quick hook. You can't let a guy like that have 200.
He faced three batters and he scored three runs.
I know, but as soon as there's one home run, gone. Like, you can't let him face another batter. You can't.
And let's also not forget the fact that the Yankees scored three runs in the first inning, caught a huge break. Alex Cobb has a little blister and has to leave the game in the first batter. Mike Wright Jr. and his 5.47 ERA comes in and shuts the Yankees down. They were unconscious zombies sleepwalking through this game. What the hell?
Well, they're hungover from all the popping of champagne. They've never been there before, so they don't know how to play hungover. They look like me when I was playing in an NABA game, drinking vodka, Red Bull vodkas in the parking lot, trying to come in playing first base, missing three balls in a row because I couldn't literally see the ball. And I pulled myself out in the middle of an inning.
Because I was like, I can't tap your helmet. I need air, coach. I need air.
Yeah. We were self-managed. This is like a Sunday league. I was like, boys, I can't see the ball. Someone else got to go over there.
I see four balls right now. I don't know which one to catch. Yeah. So I'm pulling myself out.
There's no reason for it. Act like you've been there.
This week, Boone and Cashman were both asked about Gary Sanchez and if he's going to catch the wild card game, and the Yankees are tripling down on Gary Sanchez. Cashman was quoted that he's our best game caller, shuts down the running game, handles the staff well, and we need to get him in the lineup for us to go deep in the postseason. So do you think, how much of this do you think is that they actually believe that for the short term? And how much of it is it that we cannot give up on this guy because he needs to be our catcher for the next decade?
Well, I don't think they're thinking the next decade, but like in these comments. Yeah.
Future.
Yeah, I think they need him. I think they need him right now. I think they need to throw all, I think he's throwing all support behind him because they need him in a good place. Like, they need that. They need him to be Gary Sanchez. And it's getting late early, as Yogi would say. You know, it's just getting to a point.
Late now, so it's getting late.
It's getting to a point where you know, you're just seeing, like, today I saw a good at-bat. Like, that single up the middle, I was like, okay. There was a little spark of optimism to me because there was a ball that was breaking away from the plate, going down in the zone. And, you know, a couple days ago, it's every time a swing and a miss, swing and a miss, swing and a miss. And he went with the ball and lined it up the middle. And I thought it was a good piece of hitting. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, maybe this is, you know, one of those signs that he could possibly come out of this. And he's starting to see the ball better. Because to me, that's one of those, you know, one of those key things. If he's hitting that ball or laying off of it, then he's, you know, starting to get a little bit more right. But yeah, I think they're at a point where they're desperate in the fact that they don't know what else to do but throw their support behind the guy who, I mean, he is their catcher. He's going to be their catcher next year. He's their catcher. Yeah. So they have to throw it.
And I agree that Gary Sanchez should be the catcher in the wild card game. But I really do think that this is as much, if not more, about the future than it is about the short term.
It's just out of time to be critical.
I understand the argument. If someone's making an argument that Austin Romine helps the Yankees more for the next 2 weeks and into the postseason than Gary Sanchez, I have a hard time fighting against that because of what I've seen all season. Mm-hmm. But I really do not think they can give up on Gary Sanchez. I think he's a little bit fragile, and I think that if they give up on him, then they may be giving up on Gary Sanchez forever, and they're not going to do that.
No, sure, absolutely not. And look, it, there's a week left in the season. Where's the time to be critical of guys at this point? There is none. What's the point of that? There's no to blast him in the media. What is that going to do for your team?
It's not about blasting him in the media, but it's the question that they have to answer because it's a legitimate question. Don't you agree?
That's fine. But the thing is, at this point, right now, dealing with this season in the situation that they're in currently, I just don't see any any positive to start getting negative about a guy that you need. You know what I mean? Like,
say that again. I don't get
yeah,
that.
It's another yogiism. I feel like I'm taking crazy pills right now. But there's just no reason for it. Like, there's no benefit.
There's no benefit to criticizing him at this point.
Not at this point. Everybody knows what the deal is. He's been horrible. He knows it. Boone knows it. Everybody in the organization knows how bad he's been. It's not new. It's not anything that anybody hasn't not talked about ad nauseum. We all know what this guy is right now. We know the potential. I hate saying that, and I hate talking about it still, because I feel like I'm talking about Greg Bird again in that way. But we've seen way bigger sample sizes with Gary Sanchez.
Thank you very much. At least with Gary Sanchez, when you say potential, you have a year and a half of really good performance.
Yes.
Greg Bird, you have a couple of weeks. Like, when you pile them all together, it's maybe 5 weeks.
So Gary Sanchez is a guy that they've seen it before. He's literally had the team on his back in the past. And this guy was, you know, he was Babe Ruth for a friggin' month a couple years ago. Like, this, he was like the most devastating right-handed bat. You know, he was Manny Ramirez. I mean, those are the comparisons we were talking about for a guy as a right-handed bat. Like, he was one of not one of the best right-handed catching bats, one of the best right-handed bats in the game at that time. Like, that's how good he was. So this is not a guy that we haven't seen this before. So at this point during the season, fine, throw your support behind that guy, because nothing's changing at this point.
So on Saturday's broadcast, Kay said, he's talking about Chris Davis, because Chris Davis and his 150 batting average were up. And he said, what can Chris Davis take into the winter to hang his hat on? He asked Singleton and Paul O'Neill, and they really didn't have an answer. But I thought, well, if Gary Sanchez continues this and has a bad rest of the regular season and does nothing in the playoffs, what does Gary Sanchez take into the offseason to hang his hat on?
I don't think it's so much of a hang your hat thing. I mean, why do you have to hang your hat on something? Why can't you just be like, well, that season did not go well. Everything about it was horrible. I need to get better. I need to work on my blocking. I need to make sure I'm in better shape so that I could be there for my team.
Now why he's do in I the have best to, shape of his life right now.
Why do I have to go back and hang my hat on something? I don't understand
that. He's svelte.
That.
He's svelte right now.
Yeah, I just don't like...
It's a Yiddish word.
Svelte, yeah, okay. I don't know why we have to, like, have something to hang our hat on. No, it was a bad season. He knows that. He doesn't have to, like, bullshit himself into thinking that, oh, well, this was good. No, there was nothing good from the season that he can take away. Just get better. Get healthier. Get more in shape. Work on your defense. And come back with, you know, with a resurgence. And just be a better Gary Sanchez. That's to me what he needs to do. He needs to, you know, that. Just that. There's no positive.
There could be, though.
We could make something up. If he wants to lie to himself and bullshit around.
What I'm saying is, I think that if Gary Sanchez has a big postseason and helps the Yankees win some games in the postseason,
no doubt.
You forget about the entire crummy disaster of a regular season.
1,000%. You can absolutely redeem yourself. You can get that confidence back. And if you want to hang your hat on something that hasn't happened yet, because nothing that has happened is worthy of that, then yes, focus on what is in front of you.
Have you ever heard this cliche before? Everybody's 0-0 when the postseason starts.
No doubt about it, and it's very, very damn true.
Batting averages and home run totals all reset to zero.
Yep. What have you done for me lately? That's it.
Let's talk about the last game of the Boston series. So, unfortunately, the Yankees couldn't complete the sweep, and we had to watch the Red Sox clinch the division in the Bronx. We knew it was inevitable, but we were just hoping it wouldn't happen on the home turf. I guess the Yankees didn't really do a good job defending the Bronx there. Well, they didn't have the t-shirts yet, so they didn't know they had to defend the Bronx. I give them a pass then. But Tanaka had been so good. Entering Thursday's game, 12 starts, 75 in a third innings, 2.39 ERA, and only a 663 OPS allowed, which is like in Gary Sanchez territory. And then on Thursday, 4-plus innings, 8 hits, 5 runs, and 83 pitches. And he's really struggled against Boston this year. In 19 innings, he has a 7.58 ERA with over 1,000 OPS allowed, 6 home runs allowed, 29 hits. So for whatever reason this year, Boston has had Tanaka's number.
Yeah, ended the 20 consecutive scoreless innings.
That ended quickly on Thursday.
Yeah, I guess he's not going for the Oral Hershiser mark of, what was it, 59, I think, something like that. So that's, it's, I think when you see what Tanaka did there, it's definitely, puts a little bit of doubt, a tinge of doubt into your mind, because before that game, everybody thought that he's the guy right now. He's been pitching the best, and then he did that. But at the same time, you look at what he's done over the time, and I think it was more of a blip than it was. Tanaka's not that guy anymore. So I don't know. I don't know what you're really going to take from that long term, unless you're looking at it and seeing more things and saying, okay, something's not right. This needs to be fixed. But I didn't see that. I thought he just had a bad day.
He was nibbling, and I think part of it was the strike zone was pretty tight, and you could tell that in the first inning. He wasn't getting that slider on the outside corner, but the strike zone was the same for both teams. But the Yankees also hit Rodriguez, so he was walking. Didn't Rodriguez have 7 walks?
Yes, he did. And
right, so the strike zone was tight, and when Tanaka, who lives on the outer edges of the strike zone, and he lives on people chasing his slider and his splitter, that's going to be tough for him. Right. The Red Sox are a patient team, but he threw a ton of pitches in 4 innings. He was nibbling. Part of it was the strike zone. Part of it was I just don't think we saw the sharp Tanaka we had seen for 12 starts.
No, but to your point too, like some of those pitches, even in the first inning, were like super close and usually are called strikes as well. But you can't really. It's hard to factor that into the decision. You want to see how he was throwing the ball, how he felt. But again, he's been so good recently, and it's not like I saw a guy that was just terrible. I thought that he was a little off, and I thought it was just not a great day for him. That's really what I chalk it up to. I didn't see anything that was concerning to me.
And if you're just a little bit off against the Red Sox, you're screwed.
Yeah, that's you got to be on your game. There's no doubt about it, especially against that team.
Boone's bullpen management, a lot of people were also questioning this. So he tried to push Chad Green for 2 innings. That didn't work out. Bradley Jr. hit a home run off of him. Then he brings in Dellin Betances with an inherited runner, which I guess is not in Boone's binder. I thought it was left over from the Girardi era. Don't use Betances with a runner on inherited runners, because his mind combusts and he can't handle it. There was poor defense in that inning. Aaron Hicks is trying to make a hero throw to third base for no goddamn reason. Allowed more runners to score. And then this is the one I really question, is Chapman comes in a high leverage spot and he gives up a 3-run home run to Betts. It's the first time Chapman's pitching after the disabled list. We knew Chapman was going to struggle, be rusty in his first outing, because when he doesn't pitch for a long time, he's rusty. He needs to pitch on a regular schedule to be sharp. And he came in, couldn't find the plate, gives up a home run. I don't know what Boone expected. I don't know what the Yankees expected. Like, I would have totally used him in that 9-1 game. I know you disagreed with me on last episode, but why not get his feet wet when the game doesn't matter and then let him pitch in high leverage spots? And they even said it after the game. Chapman was talking about how, I understand I'm going to pitch in less important spots going forward, just until I am back to being myself.
Until it's a tie game and we need you to pitch on Saturday. I just don't think it makes as much of a difference as you think. It's more of a factor for the way that he pitches. I don't think it's as much of a factor in the way that he pitches, because if he's off, he's off. Like, I don't care how many days he's pitched. The guy can't locate a fastball. We saw that before he got hurt too, where, even when he had pitched more regularly, if he comes in and can't locate a fastball, he's in deep shit, especially against a team like this. You can't use your slider as your executing pitch against the Boston Red Sox. You just can't. They were spitting on the fastball because they knew he couldn't throw for a strike. And Mookie Betts was just waiting for that, mediocre B-level slider. And he tattooed it. So you just can't do it. I didn't have a big problem with the way that Boone used the bullpen in that game, because the pitchers just did not execute. And, we're talking about the names that we all trust and want him to use, and these guys just didn't execute. Like, I, again, don't have a problem with Chad Green going 2 innings either, because if you start looking at some of these alternatives, they're not that great. Maybe and Chad Green's done the 2 inning thing and had success with it. So,
the bullpen at that point was rested because they didn't use any of their big guns the night before because it was a blowout.
I understand that. I just don't. Chad Green's one of the guys.
So there was
going
no
2
reason
innings,
to,
I have no problem
there was
with.
No, but there was no reason to push Chad Green for 2 innings. You could have gone Green, D-Rob, Betances, Britton if you wanted to.
To me, it's not as much of a difference. If Chad Green looked good and you wanted to run him out there for a second inning, and it's fine. Like, make the decision on that. If you think he looks good, yeah, I have trust in Chad Green.
I do too. We have a mailbag
question. These are not guys like AJ Cole who are coming out there. You're bringing a guy who was just called up in a situation like this. So to me, I don't have a problem with that. And honestly, Chapman has showed in the past that when he's in a non-safe situation, he pitches like shit too. So, yep. Like, what do you want from this guy? The guy, well, he can't pitch in non-safe situations. He can't pitch unless he's pitched every day or, you know, frequent use. Can't pitch right when he gets off the DL. Obviously, he didn't get enough throws in, you know, in the side sessions and things to make him feel comfortable to throw a goddamn fastball over the plate. Like, what do you want? The guy can't throw a fastball over the plate as the one of the highest paid closers in baseball, and he's been doing this his entire career. It's a fastball. Throw it over the plate.
Oh, I think the bigger issue here is that Chapman has really struggled against Boston in his career. So, career numbers against Boston. 17 innings, 16 hits, 16 walks, and a 7.41 ERA. He's had one inning when he was with the Cincinnati Reds against the Red Sox, and it was a scoreless inning. So we're basically talking about 16 innings, 16 hits, 16 walks against the Red Sox as the New York Yankee. That's a bigger concern to me than if we want to use him coming off the DL, if you want to put him a high leverage, low leverage, whatever you're talking about. The fact that he struggles against Boston, it's kind of a perfect storm for him against the Red Sox because they hit fastballs, they don't strike out a lot, and they don't swing at bad pitches. So if he's not locating, he's totally screwed.
Yeah, no, this is great. So the one when he had success, it was with the Reds when the Red Sox played the Cincinnati Reds, and nobody gave a rat's ass about that game. And he comes in and does what he has to do, and he comes over to the Yankees, and there's some pressure there because it's the Yankees Red Sox, and we're walking guys, not able to execute and throw a fastball over the plate. Like, to me, that's a huge. I don't really understand that when you're basically a two pitch pitcher and your second pitch is, you know, it's within his career, it's like relatively newer, right? Like the fastball is his pitch. That's what got you paid. That's what made you all of your money. That's what got you to where you are today is your fastball. And you can't throw that for a strike. We got problems.
And the numbers over the last few years as a Yankee, I mean, the Red Sox lineup has been essentially the same for that entire time, with the exception of J.D. Martinez, talking about Mookie Betts and Bogarts and Bradley Jr. and Benintendi. Like, these guys have all been there for a long time. So those are the guys he's facing, and those are the guys he's not getting out. Yeah, it's concerning. You probably need, after this weekend, Scott, a good night's rest. Is that true?
No, I badly need a good night's rest. And thankfully, we got Sleep Number bed that is able to give me exactly the rest that I need. It does improve my performance. I can tell you that much when I'm doing things, when I'm at work, every day I need to be able to focus, and having a good night's sleep gives me more energy. It lets me focus a lot more. I can be sharp. I can make better t-shirts. I can do all the things that I need to do a lot better. I'm in a better mood, more productive, all of these things. The new Sleep Number 360 bed helps everyone from their parents to pro athletes improve their daily performance through proven quality sleep. Not to mention, so many couples disagree on their mattress firmness. Sleep Number beds let you choose your ideal firmness on each side, so both is right for you. That's perfect for me. I like a more firm mattress. My wife likes something that's a little less, and she gets sink into, so it works great for us. The new beds are so smart. They sense your every move and automatically adjust to you, keeping you sleeping comfortably throughout the night. At Sleep Number Store, you can see and feel how the bed contours and release pressure points within the individual fit technology. You can actually feel the difference. So come into our the newest Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed. It's your competitive edge from $999. Come in and see the new Sleep Number 360 bed. You could go to one of the stores. Sleep Number is the official sleep and wellness partner of the NFL as well. You'll find Sleep Number at one of their 550 Sleep Number stores nationwide. Visit sleepnumber.com/Bronx for the nearest one to you.
Okay, let's get to mailbag questions. The first up is from Brett Hale. He says, I don't think that people are quite understanding the magnitude that this Chapman injury could have on the team if he doesn't come back the same. We have four former closers on the roster and have been as shaky at Chapman at times. Who would you be comfortable closing games in the postseason? So we kind of talked about it already, but I think the bullpen struggles are being misunderstood. Because if you look at the September numbers for these guys, Chad Green has a 2.16 ERA. Robertson has a 3.12 ERA. Betances has an even 3 ERA. I understand he's blown two games, which is not good. He's probably been the worst out of their high leverage guys. And then Britton has a 0 ERA. Britton's been really, really good in the month of September.
Yeah, and that's what I circle. I circle Britton, a guy, I mean, we have a number of guys here who have done this before. Betances has closed in the past. I don't think anybody wants him to be the closer. D-Rob is a guy that you know, has a comfort level in the ninth inning and could do it. But Britton is definitely, you know, the guy for me. He would be the guy that would be closing out. And for a couple of reasons. One, you know, he was the best reliever in baseball a couple of years ago. And not to say that he's back to that guy, but we're seeing a lot closer of performances that Zach Britton has put out, you know, recently. He's been a lot better. He's not walking the guys that he was when he first came over. That was concerning, but I feel like he's cleaned that up. He's a lot sharper at this point, and he's got the experience in the ninth inning as well. So he would be my guy.
Yeah, I agree, but I do think that they're going to try and get Chapman back to a good spot and use him in the postseason as the closer.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, I'm just talking about the fact that if Chapman
if he's
wasn't.
Not. Yeah. Yep. But also no, with Britton, I think
the number one thing, sorry, the number one thing is to get Chapman right. They want Chapman right because that makes the rest of them better.
Chapman was good last October. The thing with Britton, though, I think why he's a dangerous weapon in the postseason is because a lot of times what happens in the postseason when guys blow saves, they give up a big home run. Because there's not a lot of base runners in the postseason because the pitching is tighter. It's just in general, you're facing higher competition and the pitching usually doesn't walk a lot of guys. It's colder weather. So a solo home run is a lot of times how these games shift. And Britton doesn't give up a lot of home runs. So I think that's why he's also a good piece to use in late innings.
Yeah, no doubt. That heavy sinker plays well to you know, postseason ball, and just like you said, to keep the ball out of the air. They want to do that as much as possible. And, you know, I think the one thing you want to look at is he probably doesn't have as much postseason experience. So that could
blame Buck Showalter on that.
You could absolutely blame Buck Showalter for that one, for not using him. But yeah, that would be, you know, the one area where you're looking at, you know, you're not sure what you're going to get as much from a guy like him in a high leverage playoff game. But, you know, nothing about his composure or his makeup seemingly so far has you know, said that he's not going to be able to buck up for something like that. And he seems like a competitor that doesn't really seem like much bothers him.
You want to hear a hot take from my dad? He texted me after the game today and he says, since Buck Showalter is going to be fired, I think the Yankees should fire Aaron Boone and hire Buck back.
Dude, I don't know if I can handle Buck Showalter post-games.
The Yankees, like Cashman thought Girardi was too intense. Like, yeah. There's nobody more intense than Buck Showalter.
Yeah, no. It's and dry. God damn, is he dry. It would be, I love Buck for when he was with the Yankees. I don't think I can handle him now.
All right, the next question is from @bestworstwife on Twitter. How confident are you with Boone's managing skills going into the postseason? How much is Boone to blame for losing many of the, quote, must-win games this season? Not that this was a bad season, it just felt awkward at times. How far do the Yankees have to go in the postseason for Boone to keep his job? I'm really most... a month ago, if you had asked me, is there any chance that Boone loses his job, I'd say 0%.
Yeah.
It's very low percent. But if the Yankees either get bounced in the one-game wild card or lose home field in the wild card and then have to go to Oakland and lose, I could see a scenario where they move on.
I don't see that scenario because, I mean, Cashman has, he's very much attached to what Aaron Boone does. And I kind of agree. It's been an awkward season in the sense that the record's good. You're looking at that. And if you just looked at what that record was at the end of the year, and you're like, oh, Yankees had a good year. It's just the way that it's finished for the last month and a half, 2 months has just been, you know, so uneasy. And we should all be real happy and like pumped up and like super positive because we're going to the playoffs. And it just doesn't feel that way. I don't know Yankee fans that are like super positive at this point. I don't know how you possibly can be, honestly, right, when you look at the way that they play and the way that things have gone down. I don't think that he loses his job. I think there's, I don't think, I think there's a zero
He loses, I don't think he loses his job either. What I'm saying is, I would have said 0% a month ago, and now I'm at like 1.5%.
Okay, yeah, I don't see it, because the other thing is, like, when he had a fully healthy lineup in the first half, what happened? They were dominant. So he could look back at that too. A lot of people could look back at that. A lot of people are looking back at that. But the so I don't think it's fair to say that at this point, honestly, because, you know, at the end of the day, they did, you know, they won a lot of games, and they are going to the playoffs. But at the same token on that as well, Joe Girardi got to one inning away from the World Series last year, and he got fired. So what are you gonna do? Things could come out of nowhere, but I just don't see it happening, just because of there's so many ties with this front office.
Are you worried about his bullpen management or any sort of his management in the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure. Yeah, I'll definitely be keeping a closer eye on it. I don't know if I'm necessary. They have so many guys in, for playoff situations in the bullpen to use. You know, these guys
AJ
that we're talking
Cole,
about
AJ
are not going to be
Tommy
options.
Chainley, Loaisica, Luis.
They're not
going to
be options.
They're not getting innings in the
exactly.
postseason.
Exactly.
So he's basically going to be picking between Chad Green and Robertson and Betances and Britton, etc. And if one of those guys messes up, well, then that's really on those guys, not on Aaron Boone.
Unless there's a situation that calls for something that's, you know, that's completely
wild.
In,
you bring in Dylan Betances with the bases loaded and nobody out. It's like, okay, what the hell are you doing? Bring in somebody else in that scenario. But,
exactly.
But it would
be tough. No, it would be tough because all these guys are good and they're all effective, the majority of them. So it would be so I'm not as concerned in that way. I think he has, you know, somewhat of a feel for his guys. I think that was a lot of what we saw early on. I'm not as down on Boone as a lot of people are this year. I think a lot of them are growing pains, but I don't think he's been terrible.
I don't think he's been terrible. I don't think you can say a 95-win team that the manager has been terrible.
Oh, I think a lot of people think he's terrible. I think a lot of people think he's terrible.
People overreact.
I know they do.
But I think that some of what he's said and some of what he's done don't make they don't match up. And there's nothing I hate more than people who say one thing and do the other. Like, that's why we hate Sonny Gray, because he sits there and says bullshit stuff to the media. Like, he's got to find the strike zone and keep it simple and just focus out there. And then he goes out there and he poops his pants in the first inning.
Yeah, nobody knows about pooping their pants but you. I mean, this is a situation that you know about. So the fact is,
well, then Sonny, you know what? I could give some advice to Sonny. He should call me up and I can tell him, listen, man, I've shit myself in an airport before.
Yeah.
I threw my underwear out and I.
We don't need the graphic details. Spare us. But you know, Aaron Boone is also he's been in the media for a long time, so he's also very very much used to talking out of his ass. He, you know, this is something that he's grown accustomed to. He knows how to handle a situation when people are asking questions. Defer. Say what they want.
ESPN.
Say what they want to hear. Yeah.
All right. Jason says, this is the seventh year of the one-game wildcard format, and the Yankees will have now played in three of them. Also note that an AL East team has played in the game every year except 2014 when it was Oakland versus Kansas City. Do you guys like the format? That's kind of interesting that an AL East team has pretty much always been in it.
Yeah. Do I like the format? I personally don't like the format. And the reason being right now, so everybody's talking about the race. It brings more eyeballs to baseball. It's another game on you know who's going to play, brings another fan base into it. Well, and that's happened in the past. There's no doubt about it. There's been some excitement. You look at this year, it's not really the case because right now it would actually be who's making the playoffs, the Oakland A's or the Yankees, because it wouldn't be a definite that they're playing each other and where the game's going to be. It's who's going to play, in the ALDS. And to me, that's more intrigue. But, you know, it's just the way it works out. I just don't like the fact that it comes down to one game after you have an entire season. So that's the only problem for me. But it definitely brings the excitement.
But if you didn't have the one-game wild card, then for the last month, you wouldn't have Tampa or Seattle also fighting for a playoff spot.
Maybe. I mean, Tampa would still kind of been in there, and Seattle kind of faded anyway.
No, but Tampa was always about 6 to 8 games behind the Yankees, whereas they were only a handful of games behind the A's.
I mean, what did that do? Did that bring a lot of excitement, honestly?
Yeah,
Tampa
sold out.
Did Seattle bring a lot of excitement to this race? No.
Tampa Bay in September averaged 14,000 fans instead of 13,000 fans.
Yeah, so and there were Yankee fans coming in just to see what was going on. You know, I don't know. And this is an isolated year because in the past, it's definitely been.
There's been
years
where you could. There's a dozen teams who are still hoping for the playoffs.
And
so
that's
this
why
year
it's
been. This year, I mean, the National League has been a little bit closer than the American League this year. The American League has been so top heavy.
Yes.
Like, you've got all these 90 win teams, and you've got a bunch of teams winning like 60 and 70 games.
Yeah. And they all beat the Yankees. But this year's an outlier for sure, but that's why it's there. It's to bring in more fan base, and I understand that.
The wild card winner in the division series is 6-6, so you'd think that that team has the disadvantage because they have to play that one game and then travel and then they have to use their best pitcher. But they're 500 in those series playing the top seed.
Yeah, it's interesting to. Interesting to see how it's going to go. You know, I just don't think it much. I think when you're looking at that, and I think part of this goes into the fact that, you know, theoretically, if you're looking at that wild card team, you know, they may be one of the hotter teams that are coming up, and it's how they're playing. So it kind of goes back to what you were talking about before. If you have a hot team coming in, it doesn't matter where you're coming in. You know, if you are bringing up the bottom and you're playing well to get into that last wild card spot, well, you're playing well at that point. You could take out anybody.
I think that they actually make it too easy on the wild card teams. So the Yankees are going to play Sunday, and then they don't play till Wednesday, and then they don't play again until Friday. That's a lot of off days. I think they should just cram it in. Like, the season ends on Sunday. You got to play that wild card game on Monday, and then the division series starts on Wednesday. Give them one day to travel.
They have to allow for a day for a tiebreaker game if it's necessary as well. So they have to allow for
okay,
a couple
so fine,
other things.
Then play the allow that to be Monday, and then because last year the Yankees played on Tuesday, but this year they're the Wednesday game. So the National League will play on Tuesday and then start on Thursday. But I think there's too many off days because I actually do think that it might hurt the team who has to sit from Sunday to Thursday or Friday.
Well, yeah, I think that was a part of the argument with Cleveland last year too. Is, you know, they sat for a while. They kind of knew what they were doing. They got hot at a different time. How is that going to affect them in the playoffs? And, you know, whether it did or not, they didn't certainly do as well as they expected themselves to do. So,
Last question's from Vinny Ayula. You guys brought up the lack of production out of first base position this year on today's podcast. So this is a couple days old. And I totally get it because that's what it feels like to me too. Yet Luke Voit now has 9 homers. Tyler Austin had 8 before he was traded. Greg Bird has 11. And Neil Walker has 10, although he probably hit a few at second and third base. That's 38 home runs out of that position and counting. My question is, should we be giving credit where credit is due here and giving Boone and Cashman more props for taking a position we all feel is unproductive and actually cobbling together by far the most long balls on the team by position? So when you just look at people who have played first base, like what do the Yankees get production-wise out of that day's first baseman? It's a .224 batting average, .300 on base, .432 slugging, 31 home runs, and 100 RBIs out of first base.
Yeah, I mean, look, first base was saved by Luke Voit. Let's not change the narrative on that one. First base was saved by Luke Voit. So if we're talking about the position as a whole, I'm giving a ton of credit to our scouting department, to Brian Cashman, to going out there and getting Luke Voit and seeing something in a guy that, you know, the Cardinals didn't see or you know, maybe they just couldn't give him at-bats. But to give away a guy like that for what they received leads me to believe that they didn't see him as a long-term piece in any way. And the Yankees saw something. You know, obviously, I think it's a bit ambitious to see that, you know, that they saw this guy, but they saw something that they thought could improve the position. And they went out and made a move.
That's sort of like, I think that's Brian Cashman maybe being a little bit full of himself there. where it's like, yeah, we saw something in Luke Voit. That's why we traded for him. It's easy to say now.
But he's done that in the past. I mean, he's absolutely gone out and turned. I mean, look at Didi. They went out and they get guys who are, you know, not performing to their abilities at other teams, but they see the ability that can be unleashed on, you know, and they could be, you know, called upon. And it's happened time and time again. You know, I think they saw even with Starlin Castro when he was down and they got him over. They saw production out of him for a good bit. And, you know, so I do believe that a lot of the credit for that goes to the, you know, I don't know how much of it's Cashman or it's the scouting department, and Cashman's just, you know, signing off on these things, but they saw the same thing in Greg Bird as well. So on the flip side, Greg Bird hasn't been the guy that they expected him to be, and Luke Voit has been more of a guy than they probably expected. And everybody in between, Tyler Austin, I think, is what we thought he was. You know, there's not really, you know, he's gonna have some pop, but he's gonna be inconsistent. He'll be an okay glove, but nothing great. I just don't think he had a future here. And then Neil Walker, I'm sure, like Vinny was saying, like some of those 10 home runs came in other positions, but. You know, we all knew what he was too, but he was terrible in the beginning of the year as well. So it's been a resurgence, I think, the second half for the first base position.
It would look way different if Luke Voit wasn't a thing.
Oh, 1,000%.
Yeah. And I think over the last few years, first base has been a problem. When you look at Greg Bird's injuries and Chris Carter experiment.
Ever since Teixeira went down.
Teixeira's injuries towards the end of his career. Yeah. It's been a problem. Out of a position you count on big offense out of.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, that's going to do it for today's episode. 7 games left in the season. We're here. We've got to the final week. Any last
seven,
words, Scott?
Yeah, 7 games, and we already know that we're going to be in the playoffs, but this is going to be an excruciating watching what Oakland's doing, seeing if the Yankees can, you know, somehow regain what they need to you know, get some positive momentum, because I think that's huge. And then, you know, all eyes on what Didi is doing right now and how that injury is playing out. And, man, I'm really hoping. I'm knocking on wood and fingers crossed and all the deal that this is much ado. You know, he starts feeling better in the morning or something like that.
Hopefully they're being overly cautious.
Yeah, I really hope so. But
and hopefully he's healthy enough to play a few days before the end of the season, like you said, so he's not super rusty.
Yeah, that's because he's a huge piece of this.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, that's going to do it for us. We'll talk to you on Thursday.
Hey, guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.